We just wrapped up a great conversation with our friend Sean McIntyre, who came loaded with some great experiences on house hacking, buying duplexes, and getting started in real estate. A lot of great things that Sean was able to share with us, so we think you're going to get a lot of value from today's episode. Patrick, what'd you think?
I thought today's episode was another great one for those looking to get started. I mean, to do the live-in house hacks, the live-in flips, we talk about, you know, working backwards when looking for that perfect property, thinking about the tenant first and then working back on finding the property. As being a real estate agent in Northern New Jersey, he had a lot of experience there. We talk about a lot of great tips, a lot of advice for getting started, a lot of advice for how to raise kids in that environment too, because that's what he did. I think it's great. Listen to the end. You guys are going to love it. And here it is.
You're listening to the Real FI Podcast, where we discuss time-tested tricks, techniques, and strategies for pursuing financial independence today so that we can enjoy a better tomorrow.
A better tomorrow.
Financial independence isn't about getting rich quick. It's about cultivating a foundation to grow financially, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Let's figure out how to kick the 9-to-5. Here are your hosts, Patrick and James.
How's it going, everybody? And welcome back to the Real FI Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick McGrath, with my co-host, James Ripion. James, how you doing today, sir?
Good, man. I think we're going to have a great episode today. We have our friend Sean McIntyre here with us, and he's going to be telling us a little bit about real estate, business, and everything that he's got going on. So without further ado, Sean, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a little bit about what you got going on.
Hey, absolutely. My name's Sean McIntyre. I am a North Jersey house hacker. Been doing it since 2015. It is what got me my wife to financial freedom. And, you know, we've been doing it for many, many years with four kids and two dogs. That's kind of our claim to fame. So anyone out there that has that hesitation of, oh, I can't be done for this reason or that reason, full-time jobs, you know the story. But yeah, we've been house hacking, and now we're at a place where we own multiple businesses through our properties, and we're continuing the journey.
I was just going to say, why don't you elaborate on that a little bit? Let's go ahead and get into like what those multiple businesses are through your real estate. So give us a little bit of an overview with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife has a flooring company, which we leveraged our very first house hack, which was very nice purchase in a town called Summit, New Jersey. It was a $500,000 purchase. We put significant amounts of work into it, turned it into an $800,000 property. Now, oh my gosh, 8 years later, we're about $1.2 million property. So there was an opportunity with her family business to acquire shares of the company. Other individuals did not want to take the risks. They backed out. We saw an opportunity to take over, to acquire a loan, essentially. We needed to have our property up as collateral, put the property up. She acquired ownership, and has been her main focus is running that business and helping it grow, which has been a blessing because it employs dozens of people. It gets to see all over Northern New Jersey, New York City, all that kind of stuff, helping with essentially gymnasium floors, which is a very, very niche type of a business. But it's been an amazing part of our journey for helping us accelerate or buy more properties and continuing, real estate, essentially.
Sure. Is this a business that you guys own yourselves, or is it still kind of shared amongst some of the other family members?
Yeah, great question. Yes. So, her father's still involved, uncles. She is the first female, though, to take ownership, which is great. So she has her shares, and, we're both fully involved in that business, helping it grow. And, it's been an exciting journey, even a little scary through COVID, but things rebounded nicely. I'll say that much.
Gotcha. So I think that's super awesome that you were able to get involved with the family business and really start to, grow that equity. It takes a lot of courage, I think, to do something like that. So what was really the motivating factor that kind of made you guys go down that path, wanting to get more involved in family business and, take on more responsibility? Was there any kind of, catalyst that kind of made you guys think that that was the right direction to go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we always had a vision with real estate. That was kind of my push. And she's been an amazing wife and been on board with it. So that was really good. You know, obviously, sometimes there's struggles with relationships. Some people are scared, some aren't, but she's been amazing. So I was focused on real estate. And, you know, there was a part with the business where there's a lot of uncertainty that was happening. We were, you know, which direction to go, who's going to take over, all that kind of stuff. And we ended up going to a Tony Robbins event. And after the event, you know, it was very crystal clear in our heads that, like, hey, we should take over and help grow this business. So really, you know, it was an amazing event, I guess you could say. And that really inspired us to take action, put our goals down. And, you know, in a, let's say, 6 to 8 month period later, we ended up acquiring the business, or portions of it, I should say.
That's fantastic. I think that's incredible. So tell us a little bit more about how this, you know, feeds and funnels into your real estate portfolio, and, you know, give us a little bit more of an overview of kind of, you know, where everything is at with your real estate holdings.
Yeah. So I'd say the biggest thing is that it's allowed us to venture a little bit more into commercial, because the company itself has commercial property. So we actually recently just sold a commercial property that we're using for warehousing materials and all that stuff. But the goal now is to essentially take what we did house hacking, you know, the standard ABC house hack, and I kind of am calling it commercial hacking, where I want to purchase a new building for the company and essentially lease out space. So you can have your tenants paying the bulk of, you know, your mortgage or, you know, monthly payments and all that kind of stuff to reduce the overhead. So for us, it's just more getting into different avenues. Obviously, we're collecting our paychecks, so we're good with the lending, all that kind of stuff. So we can acquire more properties, you know, the kind of ABC stuff. But now it's more so exploring different avenues, the commercial side of things, with the goal of house commercial hacking, I should say.
That's super exciting. So before we dive down that road, I kind of want to backtrack a little bit into kind of your house hacking journey and give the people kind of an overview of how many you have done and kind of what that's progressed up to your portfolio currently before we go diving a little bit deeper into, you know, the next phase of things. So give the people a little overview on that process and where you guys are at now.
Sure. So we started our journey about a decade ago, 2013, by purchasing a single family property. You know, we knew we wanted to invest, but did not know how to invest. Found a local, you know, buddy realtor. He found us a property. It was close to a train station. We thought we had it made. Then I stumbled across this website called Bigger Pockets, which I'm sure we've all heard about. And I was like, wow, there is a whole new, I guess, vision here, a whole new group of people doing things a lot differently. So that single family property that we thought was so great, we ended up deciding, wow, this property actually kind of sucks. Not the best of properties, looking at what other people are doing. So through networking and connecting with members on the forums, we ended up selling that property, moved back in with my parents. And at that point, we had our one child, and my wife was 9 months pregnant when we closed on our very first duplex house hack, which is in the town of Summit, that I mentioned earlier. So that was the same week my son was born. And renovated the place, didn't really have a clue of what the heck we were doing. But we knew it, we had to do it. Everyone called us crazy. Like, yeah, why would you buy real estate right now? That makes no sense. So everyone out there, you know, it's 2023 and you're probably hearing that same story. Don't buy real estate. You're crazy. Well, it was the same story in 2015. And I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people would love to go back to 2015 prices.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, we had that same exact same pitch going on. Don't buy. Put your money in IRA. You know, you'll retire when you're 65, whole speech. So grateful that we took the real estate route, bought the duplex, renovated it, made it into a cash cow. You know, our personal strategy with house hacking is we love finding distressed properties, increasing the value, attracting luxury style tenants that are paying top dollar in rent that don't want to bug you. The way I always say it is, you know, if you're getting a higher quality tenant and a light bulb goes out, they know to just go replace the light bulb. Where if you're attracting maybe a lower quality tenant, turns into a phone call, and then something else goes wrong. It's a phone call. I don't get many phone calls. I don't lose many months of rent. You know, I get my rent payment every month very consistently, and we have things on autopilot. So that very first property was, you know, major gut renovation, turned into a luxury unit, doing a classic kind of Burr style method where we leverage that property to then acquire our next property. While we were in the first property, my daughter was born. When we closed on the next property, my fourth child was born. Third son.
So let's pause it there for a minute, because you know I'm trying to work myself through imagining, you know, what your life looked like. You know, you acquired your duplex, you had your child just born, and now you've got this like rehab going on. Like what was that situation like with your family? Did you move into one unit that was kind of like ready to live in, or was it like both needed a complete rehab? Like, what did life look like with the madness of, you know, renovating this duplex?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wonderful question. So I would say the unit we were living in, if I really wanted to puff it up, it was from the 70s, probably from the 60s. I mean, it is place. It was livable, but I mean, you don't want to look at it. I'll put it like that. Upper unit, the one that I renovated first, that I knew I had to renovate. And that was my major catalyst in all this, was obviously my family. I knew I created a point of no return. We're like, we've got to get this done regardless of what anyone else says. If we don't, okay, we're on the streets here. So that was my drive to, you know, to renovate these things. But the upper unit, it was, oh my goodness, it was distressed beyond belief. So we had to convert this thing, renovate it all, made it into a 4-bedroom, 2-bath. It was actually illegal. There are 4 illegal 2-1s. So we turned it into a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, which eventually got $2,800 in rent, which paid the bulk of the mortgage. So our goal was to renovate that upper unit, so, you know, we didn't have to pay the $3,400 a month out of our pocket. Got that place renovated, and then we started focusing on our unit. So, I mean, we were living in these units while children were being born, toddlers were running around, you know, little kids. Our children are all a year and a half apart. Our oldest is 9 currently. So, I mean, we're talking 3-4-year-olds just messing around in these places. So it was leveraging all that is really what made us so attracted to house hacking, because I always suggest that you have, if you're looking to invest in real estate, you have a triangle, and you know, you have your, let's say, work up here, home here, investment property here. You're doing this crazy commute every day. The beauty of house hacking is I literally had to walk down my steps to see my family. So it wasn't this triangle. It was just go to work, come home, invest at home. So I'm just going back and forth, essentially, which made it so attractive to us, you know, this style of investing. But, you know, I guess to answer your question in a way, we're in a distressed property for sure. And then there's photos I could show you that people's jaws are like, you were living there? And I was like, yeah, we were living there. And then I'll show them after pictures. Like, what's that place? I'm like, that's what it looks like today.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. So I really want to ask, you know, how was your partner? How was your wife on board with this? Was she on board from the beginning? Did it take some convincing, like going through this renovation process? Were there times when it was like, oh, we're never doing this again? Like, let's, you know, because there's a lot of people that are trying to get their partner on board for something like this. Like, what did that process look like? How did that shake out?
Yeah, great question. You know, she's always been very great from the start, but maybe little hesitations along the way. It was always just a matter of getting clarity. And that was what's so great about being around other people investing, is because I could always go to them as resources and say, hey, how did you handle this? How did you, you know, a great example is, you know, we had to do a lot of the work ourselves. And, you know, my mentor at the time, I'm like, you know, hey, how did you figure out how to do this? And he looked at me and he's like, you know, Sean, how I have figured this out is in the 90s, I had to go to the library, take out a book and learn how to put up sheetrock or do electrical work. And I was like, okay, what's your point? He's like, you can go on YouTube right now on your cell phone and figure out how to do all this stuff. So he's like, I don't want to hear it that you're, you know, that you think that this is something you can't do. And I'm like, once I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh. So, you know, having people, the right people or in your corner or mentors, support people essentially is always huge. And anytime I'd come into a problem, which were very few with my wife, I mean, she really has been amazing through this whole journey. I talk to my support team, I guess, and say, hey, you know, this is what so-and-so did, and this is how we can do it too. But all in all, you know, she was motivated knowing that she didn't want to work for someone else for her whole life. That was something that drove her. We were both very similar. And it's like, you know, if we stay in this single family, that first property, we're working the rest of our lives in order to pay a mortgage, which, you know, that wasn't appealing to us. So
I'm with you. I remember I was cleaning out a house and I found this book from Home Depot. It was this big, huge orange book. And it was like 1, 2, 3, how to whatever. And it just like page by page would give you all these random repairs and like things you could do to your house and like little improvements. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is what people used to do. They literally had to learn things from a book if they didn't have someone that could otherwise teach them. So, you know, we live in a day and age where, you know, nothing is unfigureoutable. So YouTube's your best asset. I've been there too many times to fix my car, you know, do some sort of home project. So, you know, let's continue on this journey. So you've got this duplex, like you're battling the house hack, you know, you're keeping all the skeptics at bay with your new real estate journey. So like, where are you guys going after this? You got things stabilized. You know, what's the next step?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we get that first payment, you know, $2,800 a month. I'm like, that's huge. So currently we're paying about $3,400 a month, the mortgage. So now, and I guess backtrack a little bit, that very first property was further west from New York City. So I'm in northern New Jersey, right outside of New York City. That very first property, we'll say, was about an hour from New York City. The house hack, the $500,000 property, is now, let's say, about 35 minutes from New York City, much closer to New York City. That first property, let's say the mortgage was $2,200, $2,300 a month. Now we have tenants paying $2,800. So we're $600 out of pocket. And we're actually living in a larger unit because that very first property was a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath. Now we're living in a 4-bedroom, 2-bath with tenants above us in a 4-bedroom, 2-bath paying the bulk of the mortgage. So not only were we in a larger facility, we were in a more desirable location. We are paying substantially less every single month in our mortgage because of that, for, you know, that upper unit. Once I got that first check, we renovated our lower unit. Daughter was born. Now it's time to start looking for the next unit. So we were there for about 3 years. Next property, I should say. Next property, this is where it gets really cool, is at the time we were paying, about $400 a month in PMI. We did a 10% down conventional mortgage and PMI was included on it. So what we ended up doing is getting, you know, reassessed and everything like that. We had a crazy equity. We had $800,000 in equity. So now we're able to do a home equity line of credit because we are above the 22% threshold. You know, the PMI went away. So we took away $400. But for $500 now, we can get $80,000 back in the home equity line of credit. So for $100 more, essentially, we were handed $80,000 to now go on to our next property, which is really cool. So that ended up being another duplex that was in a neighboring town, very similar. This time we had the systems done because we did two of everything, two kitchens, well, four bathrooms. So now we were able to knock this property out where, you know, initially it took us 3 years. Now it took us about 3 months to do a very similar amount of work. And that was property number two. And that one was, oh my gosh, about a week after my son was born. So I kid you not, for a couple of years, anytime I'd call a relative, it was a new house or a new child. And it's a new house this time. That's a new kid this time.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So this second property or third property, second house hack that you bought with your $80,000 HELOC, you know, what was the purchase price on this one? You know, how much did you have to spend on the renovation? So let's dive into that a little bit.
Cool. So this is a $525,000 purchase. Ended up actually getting my parents on board now that, you know, at first they weren't on board, but, you know, they're like, hey, you know, why don't you do the IRA thing? And once I showed them, well, I've got $300,000 now in equity and like, this is pretty cool. This is what's happening. They had a lot of confidence in us. So end up purchasing the property, you leveraging my dad's IRA, you know, the IRA that he wanted me to invest in. So I ended up using that because you get dirt cheap money on it, essentially, very low rates. So we bought it cash and then put a loan into it, just essentially just to purchase it. So we look better on our offer, essentially. So we purchased it with that money, then used $80,000 to renovate, then put a loan onto the property, paid them back, and the rest is history. Let's see, a little bit about the property. Very similar as the first one. It needed updates big time. But what I loved about this one is the first floor unit was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath. And on Zillow, I think that the Zestimate was $1,600. But I'm like, I know there's neighboring, I'm a realtor as well. So I'm like, I'm looking at the details. I'm like, I can get a lot more money on this. I know we can break $2,500 if we do things a little bit differently. So what I loved about this property is 2 bedrooms with a walk-in pantry. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, who are these people? Who needs a walk-in pantry with a window? It makes no sense. So we ended up reconverting that walk-in pantry to a half bath, which drove up the rent. We ended up converting a sunroom into a bedroom. So now it's a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath. You know, originally getting $1,600, we ended up getting rented for $2,500. At that time, we had the 4 kids now for sure. So we had to be in the upper unit. So having $2,500 coming out of or being paid every single month was a major savings. So now we had our property paying the bulk of both mortgages, our first property, our first house hack paying the bulk of both mortgages. So we were cash flowing while we were living in property number 2. And then from there, we had the systems down. So in 9 months, we are on to the property that we're in right now, which is a live-in fix and flip.
Oh, wow. That's wild. So you were able, I love the value add there on being able to see the opportunity. And this is one of the important things about knowing your market and also going and looking at everything. I think there's huge importance of that, because a lot of the times when you're looking at these properties online, on Zillow and everything, you've got to be able to see to give you an edge up in the market. Not only do you have that edge by being able to physically live in the property, okay, but seeing that value add. That's the value add that people are talking about. It's not just about putting pretty floors in, changing out light fixtures, doing a tile, backsplash and tub and all that stuff. It's being able to add that extra room, convert that, walk-in pantry, to a half bath. I mean, you basically took that up, $900 over what initially anyone else looking at the property online might have thought of. I mean, that's a amazing, amazing increase. And then you went, and when you moved, did you renovate the upstairs while you were living there? So when you moved out, it was rent ready?
Yeah. So I guess one of the beauties of house hacking and going to another duplex is there's no force of when does your lease expire? When you buy that first property, it could be a little stressful because you're like, oh, I don't want to buy it and then have to pay 6 months of a lease. But now once you're in that first house hack, it's great because I was now able to go to the second house hack, renovate it, get it ready. So the first thing I did was the floors, knowing that, okay, if I move everything, I'm going to have to move it twice. So renovated the floors, did all that stuff. And then I knocked out the kitchen. So I didn't have to worry about having no kitchen because we did that a couple times. And it was like, okay, that could be a little stressful. So kitchen and the floors, then we started moving everything over and then renovating the rest of it. So there's 2 bathrooms. So we could be in 1 bathroom while renovating the other bathroom. So now I got obviously the unit that we moved out of fully rented, which was supplementing the finances for renovating, the upper unit that we're in. So yeah, we were renovating it while we were living there, which was great. It was fun. I have pictures of my kids sweeping the floors, helping me hold the tape measure, all these little things, amazing memories that we are consistently looking back at, which, for sure. I always love to share that because there's a lot of people I know, it's a major limiting belief where it's like, I can't do this because I have kids. And I always love to say, that is our biggest reason why we do this. And don't let it hold you back.
Well, I think, along those lines, I think people also, you know, they scare themselves out of it because when you introduce kids to a situation, like you're thinking in terms of risk and convenience at the same time. So like, you know, there's going to be dust everywhere and, you know, you don't want to like jeopardize your future with a financial investment that might not pan out. But, you know, I think once you've educated yourself enough and surrounded yourself with the right people, you know, you can kind of push aside some of those limiting beliefs, like you said, and, you know, figure out how to make it work. But, you know, I'm curious on the tenant side of things, like now that you have these, you know, you've got these four units, two duplexes, how are you managing your relationships with your tenants? And because I assume that you're self-managing and you've got everything that all your properties under your control. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, becoming a property manager for yourself and what that process looked like.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really one of the secrets of Northern New Jersey, or really any state you're in, is working with people that understand what you can do once you acquire the property. And I always say, like, finding a property, there's a talent there, but it's really what you do after. Like, are you in the right hands where creating the leases, screening tenants, all that kind of stuff? And since 2015, I mean, me and my wife have yet to miss a single payment of rent. So don't come to me with eviction questions. I always tell my clients, I'm like, I'm not your guy for evictions. I've never lived through one. I don't know what that looks like. My mentor was the same way. He went through two evictions in 30 years. One of them was a tenant that he acquired from a property. So I guess he had one eviction over, you know, thousands of rental payments. So, you know, when you're going through this process, yeah, it's just a matter of screening properly, you know, making sure that you're doing all checking, checking everything out on people, making sure that they have the right income. But we're always looking to attract that higher quality tenant where it's like, you know, you're not going to run into things when someone's making $150,000, $200,000 a year and they need a place to live and, you know, they have all their ducks in a row. That's really been the focus that we put onto our properties when trying to find ones that make sense, because we want to attract quality.
So I think that's extremely important when you're looking at the type of investment you want, the type of landlord you want to be, and the type of tenants that you are looking to attract. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when you're first starting out, you get caught up on price. What can I afford? And then you try to backtrack it. And then that's why some people, they over improve the property. They spend too much on the renovations. They try to polish something up that might be a C class or a B minus property into an A property. And then they still have problems. Yes. And they wonder why. And if you go into the mindset of, okay, what kind of landlord do I want to be? What kind of tenants do I want to attract? Then you work backwards, and those are the properties that you look for or whatever. So I think that's great to know, like, hey, I'm going to be renting a $2,500 a month apartment. If that's 30% of someone's income, they need to be bringing in, you know, $7,500 to $8,000 a month. They're making $100,000 plus a year to even be able to afford this place. Someone who has $100,000 a year income most likely has good credit. They don't want to ruin their credit. You know, they're a responsible adult. And that's why you don't have issues like that. So I think that's 100%. Extremely important. It doesn't just cater to, you know, where you invest. It's what you're investing in and the people that you're looking to attract. So I think that's extremely important to kind of emphasize there. And I think that that's really great. And that's what you saw. You're like, hey, we can keep it this way, yeah, or we can really improve it. The market will allow that. And that's who we're catering to. So I think that's great.
100%. I'd love to expand on that a little bit more, because especially, I'm sure your market's very similar, but in Northern New Jersey, you know, we do get a bad rep with tenant laws and a lot of kind of stuff. But a lot of it has to do with certain locations. It's really those major cities like Newark, New Jersey, Patterson, all these places where they have very, very strict laws that, you know, I don't know what the intentions are, because they never pan out the way they're intended to, but they're meant to protect the tenants and, you know, I don't want to say hurt the landlords, but they all do at the end of the day with the rent control and all these laws. So you go and you look at a property and you're like, oh, wow, this looks so attractive. Like, oh, the numbers look great. It's not very expensive, but they're going to pay me rent. And I always say, I'm like, you know, how attractive does it look if you don't get a rent check? And that's something you're trying to avoid, where a lot of the properties that we look at don't look attractive the first year, the second year, maybe even the third year. But I'll let you know, last year on the property I was just discussing, our second duplex, I raised rents $500 and I didn't change a thing in the property. It was just tenant turnover. And I just, you know, I said, hey, let me try $300 more for the one, $200 more for the other. And they got scooped up. And I'm thinking, my gosh, maybe I should have done $600 or $700 more. Because that's what happens when you have a very desirable product that people want. So, you know, you might be taking a loss that first couple of years where you're putting your money into the property. But, you know, long term, it's on autopilot. You have consistent rent increases. And you're in towns where there's not as much government intervention, you know, the towns where that don't give New Jersey. I mean, they give a better name for New Jersey, whereas some of these cities that get that really bad name and the numbers look great, but not if they're not paying you.
Yeah. I've time and time again have come across a lot of people where they're either in one camp or the other. They're trying to, you know, purchase for appreciation and the quality assets, or they're really concerned about cash flow. And, you know, I don't know how true this is or accurate it is, but I feel as though a lot of people, as they progress further in the real estate career, try to buy quality and based on location. And then they look at it with a long-term perspective, and they understand, just as you highlighted, you know, time is going to be your best friend. If everything goes ideally, you're going to have, you know, appreciation and rental increases with a fixed expense if you've got really good debt on it. And that's kind of what the play is. You know, a lot of people are looking at the market today. You know, it's November currently, 2023. Rates are high, prices are high, and people are looking at it in a very short, looking at investing in a very short time frame, and not really seeing the bigger picture, which is, you know, as long as the numbers make sense now and you're not going to bankrupt yourself, time is generally proven to be a really good friend of real estate investors. So, you know, I think that's a very big lesson for people to learn. So let's continue on this journey. Like, you've got two duplexes now. You know, where is your investment portfolio going next?
Ideally, I really am leaning towards the current property that we're in, potentially moving out or doing some form of bring some form of income into it, whether it's putting, you know, I'm in a kind of wooded area right now. So very small town, very friendly town that it's a nice place to be. So I would love to either turn this property into some form of short-term rental, or at least have something built like a garage with a living space or something like that, you know, that I could rent out in that capacity. So that's where my head's been in the current trends. And then obviously focusing on the commercial property, figuring that out, which we're still a little bit off on that one, but it's definitely a vision that's coming to the future.
Well, let's talk about that commercial property, because I think that's super interesting. I think, you know, it's not something that you see a lot of, you know, people in bigger pockets really pursuing. They're mostly doing multifamily residential, things of that nature. People are getting into self-storage as well. But what I think is really exciting, and I've been seeing a little bit more chatter about this recently, is people acquiring businesses. People are looking for mom and pops, you know, boomers are downsizing, going into retirement, trying to sell their businesses off. And that gives a lot of opportunity to people to buy cash flow one way or another. And a huge aspect of that is also, you know, being an owner operator, working out of the real estate that you own. So this whole commercial hacking, I think, is a super interesting idea. So why don't we dive into that a little bit, and kind of, you know, get your thoughts on, you know, what that might look like once you guys are, you know, pursuing that, and kind of, you know, put that into a little box for our listeners to kind of, you know, think about.
Yeah. And it really, I guess it all came about because the fact that obviously we house hacked our residential, but we are leasing a building. You know, our primary building, we do actually lease. So the property, commercial property that we own, is just a hub essentially. And I was like, you know, we're paying this money every month to a landlord. And like, he just sits back, collects checks. He's got the building paid off. We're paying a substantial fee. And I'm like, why wouldn't you want to do that? You know, why wouldn't you want to have an asset that you can now leverage for acquiring a loan for the business instead of putting your houses up as collateral? So that's my thought process, is this is just a tool to get you what you're already doing, except you control it instead of listening to someone else or, you know, obeying to their other, you know, their rules or whatever. So, you know, the company has owned property in the past, but that's what I'm really looking to do now, is take this property that we just sold and explore the opportunity of figuring a way to commercial hack. It is a little unique with us because, you know, we do gym floors. So that's a lot of 18 wheelers and stuff like that, full of wood. You know, a gym is a very, very large project. It's not like a living room that's a couple hundred square feet. We're talking a couple thousand square feet. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play. You need to have a large enough space. Then you need to be able to have space that is going to be desirable for other vendors that are going to want to rent out. So it wouldn't necessarily be like a storefront or anything like that, but it'd be more so commercial for other trades.
Exactly. So I got like a two-part question. One, sure. is the current space that you're leasing, that building, large enough to where you might possibly go to the owner and ask to purchase that or do like a master lease on that? And then two, how are the other partners in the business along with this idea? Are they on board? Is it taking a little more convincing until you find the right property to present with them? What's that look like?
Yeah. So I guess the first part, that's something that we have pursued before, but personally, I wouldn't be against it just because ownership is ownership. I would want a larger space. I think we're too crunched at our location. You know, we're doing heavy volume every year, you know, lots of floor. So, I mean, we need a larger area. So I think to answer that question, using the space that the owner is occupying would be enough, but then we wouldn't be able to lease it back to anyone. So I would ideally like to find a larger space. In terms of ownership, yes, I would say they're on board with this. I mean, and if they're not, then it's just a math equation of, okay, guys, do you want to put your house up every year for collateral, or would you like to put your business up that you own that, you know, could leverage what we're looking to do while collecting rent? And I think most people understand that. So to answer your question, I'd say yes, that they're on board.
That's great. That's great. That's really good to hear. I mean, I think that is a very interesting strategy, you know, to be able to do that, to get enough space to where as you grow, you can also, you know, with the space that you need, you can rent out the additional space to other tenants. But as you grow, you also have space and know, hey, this lease is coming up in 2 years or 1 year. We can continue to have more and more type of space. So that's extremely, extremely interesting. So we've got this part of the business. Is there any other stuff that you have going on regarding like looking for this property? Are you looking at off-market deals? Have you, you know, are you looking to change the area or try to stay in the same spot? Like what's that look like for, you know, starting this whole process?
I would say we're early on with this. So that's what we're trying to figure out. And I think that's kind of the biggest hiccup, is just figuring out locations that make sense for employees and everything like that. Cause we are spread out. So that's probably, and in like New Jersey, it's so tough because of how compact we are. You know, every inch of the state is taken up, you know, in the major counties, and we need to be close to New York City. So there's a lot of juggling in that capacity, but it's absolutely something in the works that, you know, we intend on doing, where we want to make sure that we get this property. But figuring out one that makes sense for everyone, that is probably going to be the most challenging part of it all.
So
I love it. I love it.
Going back to something you had mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, you got the flooring business going on. You've got your two duplex house hacks. You had also mentioned that you're a real estate agent. So, you know, what are you doing in that capacity? And would you, you know, for our listeners, recommend that they get a real estate license? Because I've had a couple people that I connect with who started out, you know, they bought a couple investments, they got into it, and they really looked at being an agent as something that could help propel them forward with their investments. So, you know, what are your thoughts with that? Do you think it's a worthwhile pursuit? And, you know, just kind of give us your thoughts there.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I actually encourage all the time, get your real estate license. Nothing wrong with that. That, you know, that's why I got my license. I got it about 10 years ago now, just because, you know, I didn't really like what a lot of realtors were doing. Most realtors don't speak the investing language. So it's like, how do you go and figure out this stuff? Well, I was like, okay, maybe get my license. What that allowed me to do is then find other mentors and people that were investor friendly, and I would tag along with them. I kid you not, before we bought our first duplex, I saw probably 300 to 400 properties that were multifamilies, which puts me above 99% of the realtors out there, because most don't go into multifamilies. Very few of us consistently do that. So I was out there seeing hundreds of multifamilies before I actually purchased our first one, whether it was with one of my mentors or being that I had a license. I would literally just book times. And I just say, I'm going to go see this property. I would never buy it in my wildest imagination. But I just wanted to see it and walk through it and look at what it possibly could be. So the license to me has been such an amazing tool where, you know, getting access to the property, seeing them really fast, doing all that stuff. But then obviously the commission, it's like, you know, our closing costs are paid for. You know, in New Jersey, I always say the average, this is probably about $10,000 in closing costs. Well, the commission on my second house hack was, I think, $13,000 or so. So, you know, that's got the closing costs covered right there, which was pretty cool. So for me, it's worked out really good. And then obviously along the journey, I'm helping friends and family. I'd say my first 7 years as a realtor, didn't really do much production-wise, sold a couple homes, but I wasn't putting myself out there. Past 3 years, I'm a full-blown realtor now, where That's what I do. You know, I help people get to financial freedom through house hacking. And it's been an amazing journey because I just solve problems for the people out there that want to do, you know, what we did essentially. So I'm a guide for them. So if you're looking to house hack in Northern New Jersey, you know, there's a good chance that we probably will run into each other at some point, and I just act as a guide. So really that business started almost overnight because I was like, you know what? I've been doing this for so long. Why am I not just helping people?
Exactly.
So fortunately, because I had the license, that whole opportunity was able to happen. And the best part is now I train agents on how to be agents. I do it in multiple states around the country, always helping others grow. So getting the real estate license, yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
I think that's important just to hear like that aspect of it, because I think that's one of the big things that a lot of people are looking at when they're thinking about getting their license as an investor, is that having the access to the market, being able to go see the properties first. But that big thing is not only just seeing the properties first, it's going and seeing all of the properties. So you have an understanding of the value that's out there, what can be done, the areas. You're driving around neighborhoods all the time. You know, you really know the market better than anybody else. So I think that's extremely important. I still see the value in having your real estate license, especially with like the current stuff that's going on with, you know, agents and commissions and all of that. Yeah. I still see the value in the real estate and having your real estate license, you know. But with that being said, so we've got your journey here with your duplex, with your house hacks, your duplexes, the business going on, trying to do that commercial hack and all of that. Let's kind of dive into what your goals are for like the next like 2 years with this. You're in your live-in kind of flip now. Like, do you see yourself selling that and doing another house hack? You know, do you see yourself maybe buying some rental properties that you're not going to, quote unquote, house hack in and move into? Like, what's that future look like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say the biggest thing right now will be leveraging our existing home. You know, we bought it for low $500,000, and we just see one up for sale up the street that is much smaller and not in good shape for about $750 right now. So we're really excited about that. Just came on the market today. So we're really excited to see what that sells for. But we're hoping to have a couple $100,000 worth of equity. And I always stress that to everyone. It's like, you know, you can buy a home turnkey. That's fine. That's what you want to do. But at the end of the day, would you rather buy a home turnkey, pay someone else, or pay yourself? So I love finding distressed properties, adding the value to them, and doing it. So whether we sell this current property or leverage it to buy other properties. 100% in 2024, that is definitely the goal, is to leverage the property we are in right now, tapping into the equity or potentially selling it and moving to another one in town. I'm not really scared about the rates. You know, I think, you know, whatever, the rates are the rates. They come down, they go up, they go down. That's not really a fear factor. But, you know, well, I guess the way I look at it is like, what would you rather do? Like, would you deny $300,000 or $400,000 in your pocket if another property came up in town that was distressed and we just moved the family in there and we have a good time? Heck, my kids are older now. They can really help me. So I actually really want to do that, to be honest.
I like that. So, Sean, you've been in it for a little bit of time now. You know, you've taken some lumps, you've learned some lessons. Yeah. You know, we've got a way that we normally phrase this question, but since you have kids, I'm going to do it a little differently. So you're at a point in your life where, like, you have a good conversation with your children. They're old enough to kind of internalize this. What's one thing that you would tell them to help them get started going in the right direction in life with investments and real estate? Like, what's some advice that you would impart upon them as they're kind of, you know, starting to take the path of building wealth?
Yeah, and that's keeping them involved. I mean, they help. I have a YouTube channel for real estate, for buying. They're involved in that. They help me with all that. They're there at the properties. They're seeing what I do. They're seeing my phone calls. They're seeing everything. And I make sure to include them. I will bring them on listing appointments. I will tell clients that I have kids. If that's a problem for you, I'm not your guy. So I incorporate them into the business. Are they there all the time? No. So I don't want to scare you clients away, but you know, they are around and I love making them part of it. My kids love going on showings, seeing properties, and they're just sitting there learning because I go with a flashlight. I point out things in homes that most people are not looking at, whether it's opening up a wall or finding, you know, old school electric or things that are wrong with the property. So they're constantly getting that education. And then the advice that I give them is commitment and consistency. Just be committed and be consistent. Doesn't matter if you're good at it. Doesn't matter, you know, right now, as long as you're continually doing something on repeat consistently, you're going to get better. You're going to grow. Love sports. You know, like, make sure my kids are doing sports because that's a huge aspect of commitment and consistency. You start, you know, I'm a very, very, very big soccer fan. You start not being able to kick a soccer ball, and then all of a sudden you're kicking. Now all of a sudden you're dribbling and scoring. And it all starts by going to practice every week, being part of a team, doing all that kind of stuff. So
I think that's important. I think that's important to emphasize on, is that consistency and knowing that it's going to take time, knowing that you're not going to be the best right off the get. I think so many people, you know, they want that instant gratification that we're so used to with the TikToks and the Instagrams and the YouTubes. And you're seeing everybody's success. You know, when someone goes on to my Instagram page, the first thing they see is, you know, hey, we have $5 million in real estate or whatever it is. And it's like, oh, how long is it going to take me to get there? I want to get there right away. And same thing, like they for you, you started 10 years ago. It takes a decade.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Zuber says this all the time, one rental at a time. He says, you need to be consistently working for 10 years to get that overnight success.
Yes.
And that is the thing. It's just sticking to it. It's going out there. It's taking your lumps. It's knowing that some things aren't going to work out, but some things are. And you repeat the things that do work, and hopefully you learn from the things that don't, and you keep pushing. And if you do it for long enough, hopefully you're going to get better and it's going to work out. And I really think that that's a huge lesson to be teaching your kids, is that, hey, just be consistent, continue to improve, and over time. And I'm sure the lessons that you've taught them with house hacking and, you know, with all of that, and by the time they're going to college, you know, hopefully that's what they'll decide to do, is, you know, house hack, maybe buy like a fourplex and go out there and do that. So I think that is that's super exciting. So with this next one, though, I really want to dive into what is the motivation behind this? Because I'm sure there's some people out there that are like, man, I wouldn't want to move in, you know, and do this with my wife who's pregnant, and, you know, with our kids, there's no chance of us doing that, or you know, doing all this different stuff that you're doing, like, what's the motivation behind doing all of this?
I guess pleasure and pain. At the end of the day, it's like you make the pain of doing something greater than the pain of not doing it. And it's like you go out, and for us, we just knew, like, we stayed where we are. We'd be consistently working for someone else, paying a mortgage, and we didn't want that. You know, I'd say when we had our children, that was a huge motivator. That was like a major wake up call where I always had a drive, but it 10x'd when I had kids. And so I'm not telling you to go out and have a kid just to get motivated to do this, but that's what happened for me. I don't know if we'd be where we're at today if I didn't have our first son. Cause that just something, it lit a fire. So going out and having a family, that's an amazing, amazing motivator. It always has been for us. And then just wanting to spend time with them. Now it compounds. You're like, you know, I don't miss soccer practices. I'm there at every single practice. I don't miss the sporting events. I don't, you know, I don't have to really obey to a 9-to-5 schedule. I make my own schedule. I just want to work. I choose to work. I love working, but I'm not forced to do it. Which is a really, really nice spot to be in, knowing that you can wake up out of choice. And, you know, if you wanted to sleep in, you could. And, you know, sometimes I do, but for the most part, I get up every morning knowing that I want to work because I have a family to provide for. And it's super exciting. The motivation doesn't go away.
Well, I think that motivation comes from wanting to have time to spend with family. And of course, at this point, we all know, you know, money is time, baby. Like, the more money you got, the more things you could do. It gives you optionality. So, you know, accumulating these house hacks, or, you know, even the private business, the family business, or, you know, commercial real estate hacking. I mean, that's giving you the time to do the things that are impactful to you. And it's not money for money's sake. But, you know, with all that in mind, you know, what are your obstacles moving forward? You know, what are the, you know, speed bumps that you're trying to cross to get to the next step? Is it in your real estate sales business, the flooring business, or with like real estate private acquisitions? Like, what things are you trying to get over to get to the next benchmark?
It's a little bit of it all. You know, 100% want to make sure the family business is kicking butt, growing. You know, performing for the other family members and employees and all that stuff, which we cherish very much and want to make sure that other people are, you know, they're putting food on the table and living their lives and helping grow. So that is always a priority for sure. Growing that, which is great because, you know, that's what's so wonderful about real estate, especially being a realtor, is I feel like I have access to a lot of systems and knowledge through like virtual assistants and everything like that. Which I use my personal business. So now I bring that over to the family business. And we just hired a virtual assistant for the first time a couple months ago. And it's a night and day difference. It's just amazing what we're seeing, how much easier the workflow is, how much more business is coming in just from one person. So now I'm just like always thinking, okay, where can we add another one? And where can add another one? Because they do such great work. And that's all from being involved in the real estate business and then being involved in the family business. So we want to see all the businesses grow. You know, some of the hurdles that we'll run into is, you know, it's a family business. So family business is a family business. You always have that hurdle. I don't think I need to go too deep there. But, you know, for the most part, they're all really good people. But it's family business. It speaks for itself. and then the personal real estate business. You know, I'd say I have a very, very good lead source. We're leveraging reforums and everything where a lot of people come to me looking for house hacks. So I'm constantly out there finding multifamily properties. I'm kind of the go-to agent in Northern New Jersey for that. So now it's just a matter of building another system, essentially a lead funnel for expanding real estate team. And that's where I'm diving in with YouTube now very heavily. Working those algorithms, growing the lead funnel there. Because believe it or not, a lot of these house hackers, you know, they don't want to do it for the rest of their lives. And they're like, Sean, well, I want to buy that single family. I want to buy, you know, that forever home. So what's my solution? A YouTube channel, I guess. And now I can tour New Jersey showing you this town, and everything else in between. So not that that's a hurdle. It's actually really fun. I've been loving it. Right before this, I just had a coaching call with my YouTube coach, and I'm excited every week. It's like I've been doing it now for a couple months, 3 months, and it's like, you know, that first week when you start something, you're super excited. I always say, like, I don't care what you do on day one or, you know, the first week. I want to see where you're at, you know, a month from now. Do you have that drive? Well, the drive is there. And I'll tell you, if you guys, I'm sure you're into YouTube, but it's fun. It really is fun. And so that's been my my big focus right now. And then, always looking to acquire more properties.
I think that's awesome, man. I really do. I think those aren't really obstacles. Those are just things that you're going to have to consistently deal with. And I love how you said that. They're not really obstacles. They're just challenges that need to be overcome on a daily basis. And that's extremely important. So, man, I know this episode has been packed. I'm really inspired by your story. And I think this is a perfect segue into our next segment of the show that we call the Big Four. James, take it away, Sam.
All right, Sean, tell us something that you do consistently that is a financial independence cheat code, something that's a hack that really helps you build your finances and your fortune.
Constantly reviewing, you know, your portfolio, whether it's IRA, real estate, having eyes on it. You know, that's probably the first thing I do every morning is I look to see what the properties are doing, where I could raise rents. I still have an IRA, so I'll look at that. Constant reviewing. I think you start picking up on things that it's just that it's like the 1% gain every day. That's what you're getting from that. You probably don't notice anything from the previous, but a year from now, it's like things start turning into second nature. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Or like, why does that property next door, how are they able to raise their rent 300? I'm much larger. I should be $400, you know? So you start picking up on these things. I'd say consistently reviewing your assets, whatever they are, real estate or businesses or, you know, finance or IRA, whatever.
Solid. Definitely solid advice right there. And that's something that I'm doing right now. It's getting close to the end of the year. So I'm reviewing everything, going through, looking at all my leases, just renewing all of that stuff. So I think that's solid advice for everyone out there. You know, all right, we call this next one resources. So are there any particular books, podcasts, people that have really influenced, you know, your business mindset, your personal mindset, your real estate mindset that maybe our listeners haven't heard of that have been motivated you that they should know about?
Yeah. The first one was Tony Robbins. That was huge. I would say, you know, people have probably heard of him. I hope you have. If you haven't, I mean, that's kind of weird. He's right up there. But going to one of his events absolutely changed my life. That was always great. So anytime, you know, you have an opportunity to see him live, I would take it. Definitely. Books wise, my go-to for many years was The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. I would listen. I would read to it on repeat, especially during that first house hack. I kid you not, anytime I got in trouble, I'm like, I don't know what to do next. I would just put the book on and I just like start sweeping the floor or doing like the smallest project. And then it would turn into putting a sheetrock up or painting a wall or buying cabinets. What it would just turn into this massive project. So from that, I kind of came up with this idea of just anytime you're stuck, just do 15 minutes of something. And then I'd commit to that every day on that first house hack. It was just, I had to do 15 minutes of work regardless of what, regardless of what I had to do, whether it was Christmas morning or, you know, the middle of the summer, it didn't make a difference. I got to do my 15 minutes and that would turn into hours upon hours. And that's not necessarily from the book, but because I was listening to the book and I would just get motivation, think differently, take action type of stuff. I kind of made that little formula. So that's my little hack there. And then Give and Take, that's a huge one, huge book right now. I forget the author on that one, but I kind of make my YouTube channel based on that. Just give, continually give until people are just like, all right, well, what am I doing? I gotta work with this guy. He knows what he's talking about. I gotta listen to this podcast, you know, whatever it is. I'm like, these guys keep giving. You guys are givers. I love being around givers. So that's a great book. It's been very influential.
Well, I like your point about doing at least 15 minutes a day, because I think a lot of what it comes down to is A, consistency, but also momentum. Because the moment you let off the gas, man, that's when things fall apart. You like you go one day without taking action, and then you're like, oh shit, when's the last time I did that? And then all of a sudden, it's a month later, you haven't been following up on your funnel. So I think that's a good lesson. Mm-hmm. Before we do our third question, I got one really quick one for you. Describe the energy of a Tony Robbins event, man. Like what was that like? Just like really quick, like what's it like to go to one of those events?
Oh my gosh. It's just life changing. I can give examples. I mean, we did the fire walk where we walked across the coals. Amazing. So cool. Got pictures of my feet and they're charcoal. And I'm like, I didn't feel a thing, but it was amazing. But I'll tell you one quick story of the event. You know, that my wife was, we just obviously had our fourth child a couple months earlier and we were away, and my wife was kind of sick. I don't know why I said my child doesn't really have anything to do with it. She was just sick, but you know, so she wasn't feeling too well. And I was like, you know, we spent a lot of money and we got this event, like, let's just go. And she's like, no, I've got a fever. I can't, like, I got to lay down in bed. I'm like, shit, I'm like, what do I do? She's like, just go by yourself. And I'm like, okay, I'll go get good seats, go down there and get good seats. Cause he don't actually get assigned a seat. And I mean, we were at the arena that the Heat play in Miami. So, I mean, there's 20,000 people there. So you have to go, but you just get a section. So I went, got good seats. And she's like, I can't come. I said, just please, we spent so much money on this. Like, you got to come out. I finally convinced her to come. Within 2 minutes, everything went away. And she had the best day of her life, where she went that mindset of, I have a fever, I'm sick, I can't do this. And I kid you not, Tony snapped her out of it. Not her specifically, but to the crowd. He didn't like pull her up on stage or anything, but it was just being in that atmosphere, being around his energy, all that compounded together. And we ended up going out later that night for drinks in Miami. I mean, at 2 a.m., having an amazing evening. And it all would have never happened if she didn't come in. So it's life changing. It's just a matter of mindset and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think if you learn one thing from Tony, it's the power of the mind. And I think that's absolutely incredible how that kind of came through for you and your experience with your wife there. So that's fantastic. All right, Sean, next question.
Amazing seeing it firsthand, I guess. You know, sure. Actually seeing it happen. It is like, it's one thing hearing about everything he's saying, but then it's like seeing the state that my wife was in and actually seeing it change in a short period of time and just continuing for the rest of the trip as an amazing time.
Very, very awesome. So for your next question, future you 5 years from now, like where are you personally and where are you with business? Like describe that world for us 5 years in the future.
It's actually much sooner than that. It's, I believe, 18 months, 17 months from now. 100 deals, doing 100 deals consistently through, you know, via YouTube lead generation, growing a team to that capacity where it's just a lead funnel. Essentially another lead funnel, which then is leveraged to obviously purchase more real estate, continue on that, have the freedoms, continue the freedom that we have with my family, consistently going to locations, typically soccer related. You know, I said I'm a soccer fan, so we got Europe on that trip, you know, on that list of things to do. So, you know, we'll see 18 months from now, we'll say. Hopefully that's not too, I don't know. I'm not answering your question of 5 years, but
this is an open-ended experience, man. I mean, you guide whatever you seeing for yourself and your family and your business. So, you know, I think that's incredible.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. The 18 month window, you're like 5 years. There's so much time. Let's shorten that up. Here's what I'm going to accomplish in that amount of time. So I think that's great. So our last question is, where can people follow you? Where can people check out your YouTube channel? You know, connect with you, follow along on the journey, reach out if they're looking for a house hack, want to follow along on the YouTube channel. Like, where's the best place for people to connect with Sean?
Awesome. So Instagram and YouTube, it's Sean Sells NJRE. That's S-H-A-W-N, Sells NJRE. And then the YouTube channel is Living in North Jersey.
Living in North Jersey. Well, for all you listeners out there, make sure to go give him a follow on Instagram, subscribe to his YouTube channel, all of that good stuff. And with that, you guys know the drill. If you like episodes like this, we try to bring them to you each and every week that motivate, educate, and hopefully inspire you to go out, decide, commit, take action, and crush your goals. But the first step to that is to make sure that you share this podcast, share this episode, share the podcast, leave us a review if you haven't already, subscribe to YouTube so we can continue to grow our listener base, to expand and help guide more people to reaching financial independence. That's what this podcast is all about. And with that, we'll catch you guys next time. See ya.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Real FI podcast, where you learn from the investors that have lived the hard lessons for you. To connect with us during your pursuit of financial independence, be sure to join our community by following us on Instagram or emailing us at info@therealfi.com. If this content made you financially, mentally, physically, or spiritually richer, please make sure to leave us a positive review on your preferred content platform. Cheers to kicking the 9 to 5. We'll be right back.